We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the Wolves Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the show. We're going to do for you a little mini podcast talking about the trade deadline, which is coming up pretty quick here. Just to get it out there, if you had to put odds on it, Michael, do you think that this is going to be a big trade deadline where there's a lot of players moving around, or do you think it's going to be pretty static?
I mean, the biggest one I can remember is, I don't remember what year it was, but it was the reactionary year trade deadline when, like, Jason Kidd went to Dallas. I think that was the same year Shaq went to Phoenix. Like, we had all of these big moves with big names.
Yeah.
I don't think we see that with the big names. I think that we might see as many moves or more, you know, as we might see in a standard year. I don't know if it'll be the names. I think it'll be guys more like Evan Turner and guys of that nature. But I think that we could see as many moves just because I think moves happen when, you know, there's a variety of different agendas out there. And I really think there are this year. I think there's a couple of teams who think they could win the title. I think there's a couple of teams that are tired of missing the playoffs and would do anything to get in, or teams that don't have their first round pick so need to get in because they don't want to be given up a lottery pick like the Knicks, or, you know, teams that are just trying to completely tank. So I think that there's so many teams with so many different agendas, and to me that usually leads to a lot of movement.
Yeah. For some reason I get the feeling that there's not going to be a lot of movement. And it flies in the face of a lot of what people, insiders, are saying, that, you know, there are a lot of teams that have good veteran players. Really, those guys are not going to be part of their plans moving forward as pieces for their team when they're done being rebuilt. And, of course, there's a lot of, you know, prime teams out there that think that they're on the edge or making a move to try to get that little extra step and are going to be trying to pick up those guys so that they're natural trade partners. But it seems to me that, like, everything I hear from Orlando, who has, you know, Aflalo and other pieces that they're willing to move, and the Philadelphia 76ers, they're all asking for pretty extensive returns for these guys. Like, they want first-round draft picks and maybe a young player as well. I don't know if you're going to be able to get that from these contending teams. Because a lot of these contending teams are pretty smart, and they're not going to give you their resources like that.
Right, but I mean, that's what this whole thing is. It's a negotiation, and this time last year, Orlando was asking for the same thing for J.J. Redick. But then eventually they, you know, made the deal without the first-round pick. And so, I mean,
You think that's going to happen again? You think it's they're going to be beaten down finally?
I mean, I just think if you're a team like Philly, you obviously have no use for Evan Turner this year, or, you know, maybe even Spencer Hawes. Would you rather get a little something than absolutely nothing? Would you rather, you know, dump those guys and get a little something and lose this year, which will also help you out? I think a lot of teams, of course, right now are positioning, and of course you're hoping for, you know, a dollar on the dollar, but when it comes down to it, I just don't see the point of a lot of these teams holding on to guys that aren't in their long-term plans, even if they don't get full value for them.
Okay. So now that we've got that out of the way, let's talk Pelicans on the trade market. Do you see any chance that the Pelicans are going to do something like trying to go after these guys who are on the trade market so obviously, like Aflalo or Thaddeus Young or Spencer Hawes? Do you see them trying to get those guys, or do you think that's just pretty much a pipe dream and everybody should shut up about it?
I don't know. I do. If I had to bet, I think the Pelicans make a move before the trade deadline, but I don't know how they could get those high value guys. I think they're so limited in the type of moves that they can make. Like, you look at a guy like Aflalo, and really, what can you offer? There's no real young player of any value on this team. I mean, I'd be curious if you did a poll amongst the other 29 GMs, who would they rank as our highest value young player? I mean, I think it would be between Austin Rivers, Jeff Withey, and Pierre Jackson.
You mean other than Anthony Davis?
Well, yeah. of the guys who would actually be available in trade. But okay. How do you think that vote would come out? Considering the salaries, everything like that, if you ask 29 GMs, the Pelicans' best asset as far as the young guys they might be willing to trade, Austin Rivers, Jeff Withey, and Pierre Jackson, how does that vote come out amongst the 29?
I have no idea. It probably might still end up being Austin Rivers.
Austin Rivers, okay. And this is what I'm saying is like...
But you kind of think like somebody would take if Ryan Anderson was on the market, somebody would take a flyer on him anyways because his contract's so reasonable and he's still a great basketball player.
Right. No,
even though he has a back injury.
Yeah, you take a flyer on him, but I'm saying I don't expect the Pelicans to be able to get quality players on quality contracts, like guys in the $6 to $10 million range, the Thaddeus Youngs, the Jeff Greens, the Aaron Aflalos. I can't imagine what kind of package they could put together for those guys because their contracts are too small to be in the Eric Gordon range. And they're, you know, and then once you go down to that lower level range, you're talking about the Pelicans could start throwing out trades with the Minu, Steemsma, Rivers, Withey, and, you know, Pierre Jackson. Who of those guys really have any value? I mean, when you're going after a guy like Aflalo or Thaddeus Young or Jeff Green, not only do you have to give them value, but you have to beat the other 28 teams' best offer. And, like, the idea that if we put some package on the table built around Austin Rivers and expiring contracts and maybe a pick way out in 2016, the fact that that would beat every other offer for a Jeff Green or, you know, an Aflalo would just, it would be unreal to me. I don't think that's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. The only team I can think of that we might have something that might intrigue them a little bit but there's nobody on that team who I feel is a perfect fit for the Pelicans anyways. But what if you went to Philly for one of their guys and said, we'll give you this play, like Jason Smith and this guy, or Al Farouk, and we'll shed the top five protection on our pick?
First of all, I don't think, as small as the percentage is, I don't think Dell would ever do that, because if you did, I mean, that would just be an utter embarrassment. I mean, because right now the pick is around 11. They're within striking distance of both Denver and Minnesota. You figure that pick is going to finish somewhere between 10 and 13. In the small chance that you get, you know, you climb all the way. I mean, remember how the Clippers gave up the number one pick for in that Baron Davis trade?
Yeah.
I mean, there's just certain things that, you know, Minnesota, everybody remembers Jerry West sitting there and getting the number two pick only to hand it over to Detroit in a draft where he could have gotten Carmelo or Bosch or Wade. Like, there's no way.
Or Darko.
Yeah, right. or Chris Kamen.
That's right.
There's no way, in my opinion, that you could do that. So, I mean, it's intriguing, and I think Philly would really have to consider that. I mean, I think where we're at right now, the chances that we land in the top three, which would be the same chances that we land in the top five, are around 4 or 5%. So, I mean, it would seem smart to give up a 4 or 5% chance at something for a quality player. But again, I think the risk would far outweigh the reward, because you're not really talking about, you know, game-changing players. And with guys like Turner and Hawes, I mean, those are guys that are coming up that you'll have to give new contracts, and you have no clue what you're going to have to give them. So, you know, it's something to where you don't even know if those are guys you would want to keep past this year.
Yeah. All right, so then let's talk what we think is, like, reasonable. So I think we're pretty much in agreement now that Eric Gordon, if he had played the way he was for that brief 3-4 game stretch, can he continue that? There is a chance you could maybe move him. But the way he's playing now, do you feel like there's any chance Eric Gordon's going anywhere?
Oh, yeah. I think there's...
Really?
Yeah, I think there's only two things that are possible. I think there's an Eric Gordon move, or there's a small move featuring somebody like a Pierre Jackson or a Brian Roberts or an Austin Rivers. But I definitely, yeah, I do believe that the Eric Gordon move is still in play. I still think Dell Demps is obviously highly motivated. I think that even if he could just get out from under the contract, I think that, you know, with the playoffs now out of the picture, this would be a perfect time to do it. I would honestly put that at around 30%. I think Detroit is a possibility. I think Charlotte is a possibility. I still think, I mean, I don't know much about Cleveland's new GM, but apparently today he still kind of made some comments essentially saying that they would be buyers. I think Cleveland's a possibility. So I think there are three possible destinations for Eric Gordon. So I would put it at 30%.
Okay. Now here's where people are, I'm sure, perking up. Are you getting back someone like Greg Monroe for Eric Gordon?
So Greg Monroe, I would say absolutely not. Okay. I would say these are the three possibilities that I came up with. All are a little different. So I'll start off with the two that are a little bit lower risk. I mean, Charlotte right now is in a fight for eighth, you know, in the playoff race. They're obviously not tanking this year. They want to try to make the playoffs. Ben Gordon sitting there with a contract that could just be straight up swapped for Eric Gordon. Maybe Dell plays hardball and has them throw in Portland's first round pick, or has them throw in Bismack Biyombo or whatever, just to be able to come back and say, hey, we got something of value. When I matched that contract 2 years ago, that wasn't the worst decision I've ever made. Oh, yes, it was. But it wasn't because I got the 28th pick in this draft, or I got Bismack Biyombo, who still has potential, whatever. I think that's a possibility. I think, you know, some kind of move with Eric Gordon going to Cleveland, Deion Waiters, who by all accounts has been a cancer and not getting along with Kyrie, Deion Waiters going to some other third team, and expiring contracts, and maybe again a small asset coming to New Orleans in some kind of deal. The one that I think is way different, I really don't think Detroit moves Monroe. I think that they would be motivated to move Josh Smith, and it's the one that I would go back and forth on and how I would grade it. It's just a straight up Eric Gordon for Josh Smith swap. He's a guy that Monty has made comments in the past that, you know, that he was basically in awe of and loves Josh Smith as a player. He's a guy, you know, who's a better player than Eric Gordon, but probably on a worse contract. You know, to me, if you're talking about Detroit balancing out their roster and New Orleans getting rid of Gordon and maybe balancing out their roster a little bit, it's a move that I think both teams would consider. I think it's the least likely of the ones I've mentioned, but I don't think it's out of the ballpark. I could see New Orleans going to Detroit and asking for Monroe, and Detroit eventually countering with Josh Smith. And I think Dell would honestly have to think about that. If that's the only option, if it's February 20th, 1 p.m., everybody else says they're not interested in Gordon, and Detroit's sitting there willing to do a Gordon for Josh Smith trade straight up, I think you would have to at least think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, is Josh Smith next to Anthony Davis, if that's like your front line, is that really that terrible?
I mean, and this is the thing, is that, you know, we're always prisoners of the moment. So people, you know, Josh Smith has obviously not been this good this year, playing a lot of three. Actually, over his last three games, he's been amazing. But overall this year hasn't been good at all. But, I mean, really, to me, it all boils down to one thing and one thing only. I mean, he's taking about 24% of his shots this year from behind the three-point line. In his best years, he still took some, but that number was more around 10%. And right. I mean, he's good at almost everything else. Yeah, he has a couple knucklehead turnovers, and people just want to label him this head case and troublemaker. I think Josh Smith has always got a bad rep because he was a great player who could have been elite, but it's not like he was a bad player. It's just people saw a guy who could have been one of the 10 or 15 best players in the NBA and said, man, he's not that, but he's still, I mean, he's unquestionably a better player and impacts the game in far more ways than Eric Gordon, but is he good enough to warrant the extra year on the contract that he has over Gordon?
Yeah, I don't know, because he's also going to be a lot older too when it ends.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really fit into Dell's young veteran thing.
Right, and I mean, and that's what I'm saying. It's 1 o'clock. You only have one deal on the table. Eric Gordon's been healthy. I mean, you start wondering, well, what if I turn this down and then he gets hurt again at the end of this year and then I can't move him in the summer or next year? You know, I think you would feel pretty comfortable knowing that over the next 2.5 years, Josh Smith would give you more than Eric Gordon would. It's just, again, what's he going to give you in that fourth year, and will it be worth it? So it'd be tough, but anyway, I really do see a possibility that Gordon gets moved either for expirings and then, you know, one minor asset, which would honestly be my preference, or if really both teams are sitting there and kind of desperate, and we know Joe Dumars is right now after, you know, Mo Cheeks being fired today, and apparently Dumars next if he doesn't turn things around. I could really see that trade being discussed, and personally, I could go both ways on it, and I would prefer other things, but if that's the only one on the table, I really would consider it.
So the only other one that I ever thought of, and I still feel like Eric Gordon isn't going anywhere, but the only other team I could see him being on the table with that you could possibly pull off some sort of trade, but you'd have to be willing to take back like a poo-poo platter of mediocre to poor players, is Sacramento. Because they're both their front office and their owner wants to make big moves. They did it with the Rudy Gay trade. You could probably get them on the phone and say, look, here's Eric. You can have Eric Gordon. You give us Jason Thompson's crappy contract, which, you know, isn't anywhere near as onerous as Eric Gordon's is, and some other pieces that will add up to close enough. And you could probably get that done with them, I think. But again, you're not going to take anything back. That's great. You're going to like get Jason Thompson will probably be the best player you get out of that. You're not going to get them to put Ben McLemore into that trade.
Yeah,
I guess you could probably get Jimmer Fredette.
yeah. I mean, I guess the interesting thing, like, I mean, Jason Thompson's contract is pretty bad. It's basically half of what Josh Smith's is because it's the same length and about half in salary, but for maybe 1/5 the production. So right. I'm not a huge fan of that. Maybe you could do something with Marcus Thornton where you ship him off to a third team and get an expiring from that third team, but I don't know who would even give up an expiring from Marcus Thornton. I mean, the interesting thing, if these are the kind of deals you're looking at, is, you know, whether you roll the dice again, and when does Eric Gordon's contract, at what point of both A, productivity and staying on the court, and B, the, you know, the length of his contract that he has remaining, at what point does it stop being such a negative, toxic contract? At what point, you know, could you possibly get something for him? I mean, do you think if he stays healthy the rest of the year, basically finishes it out the way that he's playing right now, let's say he finishes it out with like a 16 PER, you know, is a decent scorer, decent efficiency, but doesn't give you much else. I mean, if this is how he finishes out the season, but he plays 75 games this season, let's say, you know, is he easier to move in the summer? If he does that again at the beginning next year, is he actually a trade asset at next deadline? Like take me through where you could possibly see Gordon's contract turning around and actually being a positive for us in trade talks.
I don't think it's a positive for you until, I mean, there's a potential that it could be midway next year, because then he is. So here's the thing you got to remember about it. That last year of his contract, it's $15 million, but it's also a player option. And what we have seen in the past is guys who score at a reasonable rate will frequently decline that last option to grab a longer, long-term contract from somewhere else. And yeah, maybe they're not going to make $15 million a year, but if they can grab a four-year, $40 million deal, that's $40 million guaranteed. That's a good thing. So if he plays the rest of this year out pretty well, and he plays next year, and not even like if he plays like a contract year, which is still on the table, that's a possibility. If he plays half the year and he's pretty solid, I actually feel like he's likely to opt out of that player option.
Yeah, I would put the odds, obviously not knowing the future, but I would put the odds today at him opting out at about 70%.
Right, which means that really this is, you get through this year and next year in the middle of the year, I think he becomes an asset. So it's really, does Eric Gordon being on your cap this summer kill you in any sort of team building way.
I
having him clog up that much space so you can't sign anybody else is that end game for your ability to put a good team around Anthony Davis?
I think so, because I really think if you get him off the cap, you go get a guy like LeBron this summer. Like, that's easy. No, I'm just kidding, obviously.
For a second, I really thought you were serious, and I was like,
I mean,
floored.
Don't think I even played in the conversation in my head where you go to LeBron and go, all right, you have a chance to play with Anthony Davis, the guy who's going to take the throne as the best player in the league soon enough. I mean, for just basketball reasons, I think LeBron could do a lot worse than being surrounded by Jrue Holiday, Ryan Anderson, and Anthony Davis. But no, of course I'm just joking. But yeah, I've always said if this guy's not going to be a part of your future, the sooner you get rid of him, I mean, we had a conversation on our last podcast about how Tyreke Evans doesn't understand his role. Like, at some point, you need to just have the main guys on this team that you're going to have and have them know their role and start playing in their role. Obviously, if Eric Gordon's kind of here as a temporary passerby, you know, those guys are not going to be playing the exact roles that they're going to be playing, you know, when you get all the pieces that you want. So, yeah, getting him out of there as soon as possible and using this summer to kind of, I mean, I would get him out of here and then have a Portland Trail Blazers type of summer. I wouldn't go after another big guy. I would try to get a couple of guys that, you know, teams are dumping because they're getting somebody else or because they just got this new shiny draft pick or, you know, picking up somebody with a pick to take on a salary. Just, we've seen two straight off seasons where Dell Demps has had money and flexibility, and he's had good off seasons. I mean, in off season one, he gets Ryan Anderson and Robin Lopez for about $13 million, and that's a good off season. And then in off season two, he uses the flexibility and some picks to get Tyreke and Jrue. This idea that, well, what good is cap space going to do because nobody's going to want to come to New Orleans? Like, that's just shown to be a stupid point of view at this point. Because two straight summers, and, you know, he's used flexibility in order to get quality players. So I don't know exactly who it would be. But, yeah, I feel confident that if Dell goes into this offseason with about $17 million in cap space, which he would have if he just straight up dumped Eric Gordon and got nothing back, or an expiring back, I do have confidence that with $17 million in cap room, Dell Demps would put a really good team around this core four.
You know what I think would happen?
What?
He would sign Rudy Gay to a 4-year, $50 million deal.
Oh, no, I don't. I wouldn't see that. I really would see. I really think they have a bunch of guards. I would see maybe Pierre Jackson being brought in to add some more spark, and then just filling it out with role players. But yeah, to me, of course, I don't want to take back another toxic contract for Eric Gordon. I'm realistic. I'm not thinking you're going to get anything good, but I would be ecstatic if on February 20th, Eric Gordon was gone and all we got was an expiring contract.
Okay. So that's Eric Gordon. We talk way too much about Eric Gordon anyways. So let's talk about your little trades, because I mean, I've looked around and I honestly don't feel like there's a lot of little trades out there, because I don't think that moving Aminu for anything is going to move a needle for the future by very much. Jason Smith, you're not going to get much for him because he's out this year, so you're not going to be able to move him to a team that wants to contend for like a second, like a low first-round pick or a second-round pick or anything like that. So what are you thinking? What do you think this team can do?
I mean, yeah, I do think little trades. I mean, I did have a Twitter follower suggest something like, and this would have been ridiculous a couple of weeks ago, but the guy's having an absolutely terrible season, and by all accounts, the Clippers want to dump him. I mean, they could go either way on this. They could use another big body or maybe a rebounder and a wing. I mean, do you think Jared Dudley for either Steemsma or Aminu is absolutely ridiculous and there's no way the Clippers would consider that? Or with, you know, the rumors out there and how bad he's playing, that something like that would be possible?
I think you could possibly pull that off. It all depends on how good they feel about Ryan Hollins.
Yeah.
Can't feel that good about him, but I mean, if you ask yourself the question honestly, is Steemsma an upgrade over Hollins? Aminu is. I mean, Aminu makes more sense in that kind of that trade.
Yeah, and I mean, their second unit, when that team was healthy, their second unit was famously terrible defensively and had trouble rebounding. So, you know, maybe Aminu there could work. Seems like a guy that Doc Rivers might be okay with. So something like that where, you know, the Clippers just get rid of Dudley and then hopefully he could kind of get back into his old form as a spot-up shooter. And to me, I mean, that's the exact perfect type of guy that I would want as the small forward on this team. Again, if I'm talking realistically, obviously I'd want, you know, Paul George if everything was available. But as far as realistic options, I think a little trade like that. I think another one is, you know, there's been this rotating centers thing that the Pelicans have been doing. Again, we're not clear if Jason Smith comes back next year. You got Steemsma and Ajinka and Withy, and, you know, none of them have been really impressive. You've got a team in Memphis that's playing better. And since Marc Gasol came back, this guy hasn't really gotten any minutes lately with Gasol back, and it's Kostas Koufos. I think something like Greg Steemsma and Pierre Jackson for Kostas Koufos would greatly interest them. I know Hollinger's an analytics guy. I mean, the analytics said that Pierre Jackson was a surefire first-round pick coming into this draft. I think Kevin Pelton had him rated like somewhere around 16 and, you know, was saying such when we had him on the podcast discussing the Jrue Holiday trade originally. I think a small little move like that, and I know people probably aren't, you know, very well educated on Kostas Koufos and, you know, probably just think of the name and don't think he's a very good player, but I think he would be a huge upgrade over the centers we have now, and honestly think he would be very close to, if not better than, what the Pelicans had in Robin Lopez in a kind of roundabout way, using that the Pierre Jackson as a trade asset. You go and get another Robin Lopez type in Kostas Koufos. To me, a small deal like that would make me very happy.
Yeah, it makes sense, though. I will say that I know secretly in your heart you're praying that Nick Calathes is included in that trade.
Yeah, I picked him up today in my fantasy league, and he pretty much single-handedly put me over the top and helped me win this week. But Nick Calathes, but
I said his name wrong.
Of course
awesome.
You did. But no, I mean, Kostas Koufos this year, he had to do a lot with Gasol out, so his numbers dipped a little bit. But, I mean, really, if you look at him, especially last year in Denver, I mean, this was a guy that per 36, you're talking about Tyson Chandler numbers, 13 points, 11 rebounds, 2 blocks. Tyson Chandler, when, you know, he was with the Pelicans in 2007, 2008. You know, over the last 3 years, PERs of 17, 17, and 16. I mean, an above-average guy, a big guy. I mean, 265 pounds, legitimate 7 feet. I think, you know, he would be a huge upgrade and the exact type of guy that we're talking about, Ryan Anderson coming back next year. The same kind of guy to play the role that Lopez did of 20-minute starting center, move aside for Ryan Anderson and Anthony Davis to finish games. But a small little move like that, I think, would pay off down the line. He's got a $3 million team option next year, which is a huge bargain for a center in today's NBA. So something small like that would make me really happy.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't disagree with that trade. These are the kind of things that we, at best, I think should be expecting. I'm still like 100% certain that Gordon will be a Pelican when the trade deadline ends. But, you know, I've been wrong many times before. So I think that's it for our trade deadline podcast. If you have a trade you think makes sense, even if it's a really stupid one, like, you know, trading Anthony Davis for anything, go ahead and give us a call, 504-322-3333, and we'll actually respond. We'll play some of our favorite ones on one of our next podcasts. So thanks, everyone, for listening to In the Know. And again, it's 504-322-3333.